Hello and welcome to The Whole Health Cure, a space for trustworthy, science-based information on how you can live healthier, longer, and happier naturally. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist, a practicing Yale and Harvard-trained physician and scientist with 3 decades of clinical experience helping people prevent and manage chronic disease and add healthy years to their life, and author of The Stress Paradox, which explores the daily habits that enable us to reach our highest potential for health, happiness, and longevity through our innate capacity for resilience and regeneration. Today's conversation is about midlife hormone changes in women, how they impact our body, what we can expect, and what we can do about it. I'm joined by Dr. Jila Senamar, who's a board-certified obstetrician-gynecologist and founder of Jila MD, a personalized women's midlife health and longevity practice in Miami. With more than 20 years of clinical experience, she specializes in perimenopause and menopause care, evidence-based hormone therapy, metabolic optimization and longevity medicine, helping women restore energy, resilience, and long-term health through individualized, science-driven care. She's the founder of the Miami Menopause Collective, the Empower Her Miami Women's Health Exposition, and Second Bloom Health, initiatives dedicated to expanding access to trusted education, community, and modern menopause care. Widely recognized for her clear, compassionate approach and rigorous commitment to evidence-based medicine, Dr. Senamar is a leading voice shaping the future of women's midlife health and longevity. Jila, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Sharon.
I am delighted. And so, Jila, let me first start by thanking you for the amazing work you do. You have made such a contribution to the conversation around women's health and raising awareness. And I think that always is a labor of love. So thank you for putting all the energy and effort you do to helping get the information out there.
It's been a whirlwind, an eye-opening experience. And I think what happens is when you are in the midst of these midlife hormonal shifts and changes, and being a woman, you know, we all go through this, and to see the lack of information, knowledge, resources for women, it's up to us to make that change. And if we don't do it, there's nobody else who's going to do it for us. So I think it behooves all of us women to really open our minds and look outside the box and see what else there is out there so we can help each other and help other women out there. So I think it's just our responsibility, honestly, as healthcare providers and practitioners.
I couldn't agree more. And I'll kind of add that I think so much of learning how to understand this information is also a big part of that. I think that's shifted a lot throughout our careers. And I think the excitement over the potential that we have as women and as people to age differently, to live differently, is such a fuel, at least for me. I'm curious what got you interested in women's health, and your entire career, of course, is dedicated to that. And maybe you can give some backstory behind what you do.
My whole career was really cemented in my mind when I was in high school. To go all the way back, I remember I knew I was going to go into the field of medicine. That was just something that I always had a passion for, but which field, I didn't really know what aspect of it. And it was a local gynecologist who decided to just have me follow him around in a little upstate town in California where I grew up. And basically, I just followed him just to kind of get an idea of what an obstetrician gynecologist did, because we all have these ideas of babies and this and that, but really, I didn't know much more than that. And imagine you're in high school, so you can't really make any kind of definitive determination, but it left a lasting impact on me where even through college, it was always in the back of my mind. And I'll never forget, everybody would dissuade me about the field. Oh, you won't have a life. Oh, you'll always be on call. You know, babies come whenever they want to come. And so got a lot of that kind of negative feedback. And that doesn't really do much for me. I take it and I just smile and I keep going. If I have my mind set on something, you can try and dissuade me all you want. I will still get there. I'll figure out a way. And so that's kind of what happened with medicine for me. I just figured out a way. I went to medical school And even when you're in third and fourth year, you're doing your core rotations and you go. And I decided I was going to be realistic. I'm going to give everything a chance. And I did. I went to internal medicine, pediatrics, psychiatry, general surgery, and nothing made sense to me except women's health, OBGYN. Imagine, we're taking care of women from all aspects of their lives, from when they're younger. You know, we deliver them, then they get older and we watch them go through menarche and then reproductive age. And we're delivering babies, we're operating, we're surgeons, we're primary care providers. I couldn't see anything other than that for me as a career. It just felt right. You know, when something feels right, you're just kind of like, this is it. That was me. And luckily, I have to say, my career has allowed me to have a work-life balance more than anyone would have expected. We're still on call. I did all of that for 25 years. I delivered until December 31st, 2025. That was my last delivery. Over 5,500 babies that were part of my career, robotic surgery, you name it. I've done it all. But what I noticed was I was really good at it. And, you know, other docs have said this, and it's because it's true. We're great at being OBGYNs. We can do obstetrics until we're blue in the face. Any kind of trauma, anything you throw at me, I have it. We're great at doing the gynecology part until it gets to midlife care. We're kind of at a loss. We're like, okay, yes, it'll be okay. It'll get better. I don't know. We'll see. How bad are your hot flashes? They'll get him. So it was a lot of that, and it wasn't enough for me. I realized I'm missing a piece. I don't have real answers that I can provide my patients, and they're looking to me, and I've always had an answer for them. And that's where I decided, you know what? There's more. There's something else going on. And this was 6-7 years ago. Again, it's really disappointing that we weren't where we were in our training and when everything happened with the research studies of the Women's Health Initiative study. And we always talk about that because really it stems from that, the fact that we weren't taught in training, which is where you're supposed to learn this, if not in medical school. So that's where I kind of, you know, I was like, okay, I think I missed something. Let me go back and figure this out. And that was, again, another thing where they're like, you could just retire and be done with it. What are you doing? And I said, I know, but something's going on. And I've been in my own little bubble for too long. I need to know what else is out there. And that's when I started traveling and going to different women's health conferences. And it was an eye-opener. You know, you've been in those rooms where you just kind of are like, wait a minute, what happened here? And that was the beginning of this next chapter for me. And I started putting it into practice almost instantly. And I could see the changes in my patients. And I got that excitement again from the same as you get when you deliver a baby or a successful hysterectomy. I was like, oh, yes, this is where it's at. And women were getting better, you know, within a few months, their whole lives could be changed completely for the better, where they thought, this is it. I'm just going to be an unhappy individual for the rest of my life, you know, and I'm 51 years old and this is it. And I'm never going to be intimate with my husband again because, you know, I don't even feel like talking about that. So that's where I was like, okay, there's more here that I can offer. And so this is what I want to do now with the second half of my career. And so that's kind of, you know, where you and I met was at one of these conferences where we just kind of hit it off because we're all very like-minded and we're aligned in how we approach women in midlife. Because for too long, we know they've been dismissed, misunderstood, just kind of like, and they've been quiet about it too, with this suffering and silence concept that we need to do away with.
Yeah, I can completely understand and relate. In terms of women's health, what have you seen be the biggest shifts in how we help our patients and as well as just in the knowledge around women's health?
So I think a lot of us who are on the front lines of this movement, I have to say, we are shifting away. I think at the beginning, it was about hormones, symptom management, getting you better, not suffering in silence. You need to talk about it. We need to listen to women and take them seriously for their symptoms. I think we've moved past that where we're realizing it's more than just symptom relief. It's actually you're managing their long-term health with these treatment options that we're discussing. So we're going beyond just the superficial. We're actually getting to root cause analysis for women's health and understanding, where is that heart attack coming from? When did that start brewing on the undersurface that we didn't know about? And that hip fracture, when did that begin? And is there something we can do about it? So we knew the role of estrogen, we just didn't know, in my opinion, the extent of what it can do to a woman's body until it was too late. So we're kind of turning from being reactive to more proactive. And that's really exciting to see happening in the field.
I think it is a very exciting shift in the understanding of the role of estrogen. As you just said, nearly every part of our body has receptors for estrogen. So the physiology of how our body changes as the levels start to fluctuate and eventually decline completely affects every aspect. Let's a little bit more detailed around describing what exactly changes as a woman goes through midlife. So what can a woman expect? You mentioned certainly there's symptoms that we are familiar with, but beyond the symptoms, the actual physiology of that decline in our brain and our heart and our muscles.
So you said it, where we have estrogen receptors everywhere, from our scalp to our brain, hair, everywhere, your bones, the vessels around our heart, the skin, our face. We all feel the face is like, oh, what's happening here? So let's do something about this. But what's really important is to understand, actually, in midlife, it's really progesterone that starts fluctuating first and declining. And that relates the way it presents in perimenopausal women or women in their mid to late 30s, early 40s. So before anyone would ever look at them and say, hey, you're in perimenopause, you need to realize they could be having sleep disturbances. They could be having mood issues, anxiety, things like that no one's paying attention to. And or just saying, oh, it's the stress of life and everything else that you're doing, that must be it. And in reality, it's really lowered progesterone levels that are causing that. And you can really manage it quite well if you notice it, if you identify it within your patient. And then comes the estrogen chaoticness, I should say, because it doesn't just drop off, which is, I think, what most are expecting is to a fall off a cliff. It doesn't work like that. It's more of a up and down undulation of the hormone levels. And it's that high and low of the hormone levels that really amplify the symptoms that women are experiencing. So it's first progesterone, then estrogen, and testosterone is actually the last piece to drop off. And that slowly declines. And after menopause, then it goes all the way down and goes to zero. So in women, their bodies give them little signals, little things here and there. And as long as they're aware of it and they're paying attention, then we are able to have that conversation. Most of the time, what we're seeing and what I tend to keep seeing in my clinic and in rooms where I'm speaking all the time about these topics is they didn't even realize these were symptoms of perimenopause. They couldn't even give it a term until just recently. So we did a great job, I think, identifying menopause a few years ago with the M Factor documentary coming out and everybody talking about it. Oh, menopause, where no period for one full year, then you're in postmenopause. So we did a great job with that. No more periods, hot flashes, not feeling well, not feeling like myself. Now you need to really work on the perimenopausal women who can experience a lot of these mood changes and sleep disturbances and anxiety and weight gain and metabolic shifts a good 10 years before they even hit menopause. So that is the next phase of the movement. There's a whole nother documentary that's being released in just a month, the M Factor 2, the perimenopause, so the time before menopause. And again, it's been a challenge because number one, providers aren't recognizing it. Number two, the patient's not recognizing it. So we need to be that, like I say, we're the frontline people, meaning the patient's not going to tell you. You need to get it from them. They're coming in for their annual checkup. They're talking about a pap smear and getting their mammogram done and a breast exam. And I've done this and I keep doing it. It's a way I test everything that I talk about. How is everything? Wonderful. How are your periods? Great. No problems. Okay. Are you sleeping well? Well, no. What happened with your sleep? Well, it was fine. And now I wake up at 3 a.m. every night and I don't know what's going on, but it is what it is. You know, that's number one right there. I'm like, okay, so that's a signal. Okay. What else? Tell me. Then I go back to the periods because they're regular. How regular are we? Oh, well, no, they skip a little bit here and there and they're not as light as they used to be. And now they're heavier. So now we're having cycle irregularities. Okay. So there's another point for perimenopause. And how do you think you are at home with the kids and you're, oh, well, they think I'm crazy and I'm yelling at everybody and my friends have stopped talking to me. There you have it. You have mood, you have sleep, you have cycle irregularities. And I tell them, did you ever think you may be in perimenopause? No. Number one, no, I don't even know what that is. Or can you test for that? And I tell them, we can look for lab, we can do blood work to look at hormone levels and check other abnormalities. We can check your thyroid level. We can check iron panel, things like that. But really, there is no absolute test for perimenopause. It's a fluctuation. If I check your blood work one day versus another day, it could look completely different. So it's really more of a clinical diagnosis, talking to the patient, understanding where they are in their midlife journey, and then explaining it. And when I do it that way, then they're like, oh, that makes sense. So do you think there's anything I can do about this? You know, so these are the conversations that we're having, that I'm having on a daily basis. And it's even more interesting when you're in a room on a panel discussing these things and the women are blown away because it's something new that they've heard that they've never been told. And they're like, but why did my doctor tell me my blood work was normal and that everything was okay?
When you have a patient, so I have a practice that has obviously a lot of women. I see both men and women, but when women come to me midlife and we certainly talk through symptoms that they're noticing, you know, for me, one of the challenges is differentiating. A lot of people also have a lot of stress in their life. We all are very busy. They may be, you know, having work stress, family stress, relationship stress, financial stress, and, you know, certainly some of the symptoms of perimenopause can overlap with so many other things that I think we experience in the course of life and with aging. How do you guide women, you know, in terms of establishing there's obviously hormonal link to some of this, but as you mentioned, lab tests can be a little challenging. So how do you help people determine if it is perimenopause versus potentially other things? And in both scenarios, you know, how do you help people feel better? Like, what is your advice and your approach so that people can manage this transition better?
Just speaking with them sometimes can help quite a bit, where they feel that they're not alone and that it's not happening only to them, that other women are actually experiencing it too. And that's part of the reason I think community is so critical in this midlife. It plays such a big role. And you've seen different platforms and different communities building online. Like, look at Melanie, right? She's here in Florida. She just went on and talked about her symptoms. It blew up because women relate to that. They realize, oh my gosh, it's not just me. Oh my God, it happens to everybody. And I think once women have that support, that's kind of half the battle, in my opinion. And the other parts of it are lifestyle modifications. If I can get them to sleep better, they feel better the next day. They're more productive and maybe they won't be as edgy. And bringing in, I think, the other side of the conversation, the partners, the husbands, the significant others, and having them understand what women are going through. What is happening in her is biologically something. It's a hormonal fluctuation. It is completely out of her control. There's not a lot she can do about it, but there are things that can be done to mitigate those effects. And I think once the husbands and partners understand, then things start to improve slowly. And they know how to manage it going forward. So improving sleep, journaling, meditation, kind of grounding yourself every morning, giving yourself this. These are parts of what I call self-care. It's not all about face masks and saunas, and those are great, don't get me wrong, but it's really listening to yourself, to your body, what it's telling you, and realizing, number one, everybody else is going to go through this too. If they're a woman, they were born with ovaries, this will happen to them. We're 51% of the population. So this is not anything novel. This is something biologic. It's not a decline. It's not the end of the world. It's just another phase to get through. And you will get through it with the right support. You're not just going to get through it. You're really going to glide through it and come out even better, I think, on the other side of this.
As women progress further in perimenopause, so let's get now to the point where there's some irregularity in the menstrual cycles and more evidence that the hormones are getting even more dysregulated. How do you, first of all, evaluate that? And how does your advice change throughout the course of perimenopause leading up to menopause?
That's a great question, because not everyone's going to be ready for everything at the same time. So there are different phases to this, even perimenopause. There's early perimenopause and there's late. And in early, I think each individual woman's story is completely different and where they are in their journey. And so I listen to them explain to me what's going on and how it's affecting their quality of life. Because if it's minimal, and they're now understanding what's going on, and they just want to make sure they're doing the right things and applying the appropriate lifestyle modifications, getting sleep, minimizing their stress, eating the right foods, moving every day, then we follow along. I have them come in every 6 months unless they need me before then. Now, going forward, now you start getting into that late perimenopause phase where you are going to see more hormonal changes, which will then make the periods heavier or lighter. They can skip for 6 months, which then their hormones are really completely dysregulated. And in that individual, again, it's quality of life. And most of the time, it's really affecting them. They're just not happy. They don't feel well. It's affecting relationship, work status, everything. And that's where they've already applied the lifestyle modifications and it helped them for a bit, but not anymore. Now they need more. And that's where we open up the conversation about hormone therapy. And even that can vary. It could be just a progesterone that'll help them. It could just be progesterone and estrogen, or it could be all of them. It could be estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone at the same time. And even that can be used differently depending on if they need contraception or not, because you can still technically ovulate even if you're in perimenopause. So now we have to make sure, because we know that hormonal therapy will not affect ovulation. So you will still ovulate. It's not high enough dosage. So in that individual, we would have to consider contraceptive options plus bioidentical hormone therapy. And you kind of piecemeal it together with them. You can use a progesterone-containing IUD, and then you can use an estradiol component. Or you can use a progesterone-only birth control pill and add in the estradiol component. So those are all the different ways to kind of have that conversation with the patient. So that way you have basically shared decision-making with them to see where they are, how bad is it, and now let's treat. But it's not one size fits all. It's so individualized and precise. And it takes time to get a woman to really where they need to get to. Some faster than others, but nonetheless, it's not a one and done. And sometimes we just need to keep adjusting doses a little bit and adding a little bit of this and taking a little bit of that off in order for her to feel better. But there is light at the end of that tunnel.
And you start doing this potentially hormonal options for women that it's right for, you consider that in the perimenopause transition. So even when there are still some cycles, but with some irregularity.
Absolutely. Yes. Because I know there's some thought on you need to be in menopause to start hormone therapy. And
that's exactly where I was going with that, because I think that's been the more general approach, I think, historically. And I think now this consideration of treating symptoms and not having to wait, because this perimenopausal period can be so many years and so disruptive to so many women. And when you do that, how do you have the conversation? You know, historically also, I think the conversation around hormones, when people ask, like, what are the pros and cons, it's historically centered around breast cancer risk. And also on the pro column, you have bone health, reduction in colon cancer. On the con column, there's the big category of breast cancer risk. Yet we also now know that this pro and con column is heavily influenced by all the ways estrogen deprivation affects our body, as you already mentioned, in terms of body composition, insulin resistance, et cetera. When you have that conversation, what are things that you share? And for people listening, to think about in that decision making as to whether hormones could be right for them?
I think the best thing we can do for our patients and for women is to let them know that there are options, not that it's one way or the other, that you have to be on it, but let's have the conversation to understand the why behind everything of what we're talking about. I've had women tell me in my office, you know, I'm 53 years old. I went through it already. I had the hot flashes. Yeah, they were pretty bad, but I got over it. So why do I need to have this now? And my answer to that is, well, let's look at your bone health. Let's look at your heart disease risk factors and see how we are. And most of the time, I tend to find osteopenia or something else like that underlying. And that's enough of a conversation to say, listen, we're going to be proactive. We're trying to be preventative here. You're only a couple of years out from your menopause. You know, we know the timing hypothesis is you can start hormone therapy. Your benefits outweigh any risk that you may have within the first 10 years after menopause. So you're only a couple of years in. You can still benefit from it. You don't have any risk factor for breast cancer. She obviously doesn't have breast cancer herself, because that would be the biggest risk factor. Everything else, a family history of a maternal aunt or somebody, that will play into your risk factor assessment, but it doesn't negate the fact that you can use hormones. You're still a candidate for hormones. And even a mom, so the patient, but her mother had breast cancer, the patient is still a candidate for hormone therapy as long as she hasn't had anything. We again take that risk factor and put it into a calculation and know, hey, she is at risk for this, but it doesn't mean she can't be on hormones. So I think once women understand that, they're more open to the conversation to understand we're talking about protecting your bones. We're talking about heart disease prevention, because we know those little vessels around your heart need that estrogen to keep them elastic and flexible and prevents high blood pressure, plaque formation, and all the other things that kind of can lead and then go to the metabolic side of things, where it can cause high cortisol, insulin resistance, and weight gain, which is the most dangerous kind of weight gain, which is visceral fat rather than subcutaneous fat. And these are all precursors for disease down the road. And again, we know there's also a role in memory loss, dementia, and all of that lack of estrogen. So those are the conversations we have. And most of the time, women are willing to try a regimen because, number one, they want to feel better. Or number two, now they're becoming proactive. They're becoming the CEOs of their own healthcare, and they want to be in charge of that. They don't want someone telling them what to do. They want somebody having a conversation with them and explaining the pros and the cons. And then they make that informed choice for themselves.
So in women who don't have symptoms, without hot flashes, or they're sleeping okay, relatively good mood, the benefits that you see from hormone management in terms of managing risk of disease and aging healthily still outweigh the cons, the risks associated with it? Yeah.
Especially if they're within that 10-year window, you still have an opportunity to improve your own health. So like at 60, 70, and 80, you're not having that fall. You're not having a heart attack or a pulmonary embolism or losing your balance.
For me, I think that's really a shift from thinking of hormones as treating symptoms, right, to a preventive strategy. And it really begs the next question, which I'm often asked, which is, well, how long should I be on the hormones?
Yeah. What do you tell them?
Because I view this as a preventive strategy, For me, it is a fairly long duration, given we as women have a pretty long life expectancy. So to me, it's certainly until later decades. And then it's a harder conversation because if people run into things that will affect their lifespan or life expectancy, then we try and think of when it makes sense, similar to when we're managing heart disease risk. How long should I be on a statin? Well, you know, it, certainly for a lot of decades, it makes sense to aggressively prevent heart disease. And there becomes a point where that's not necessarily the strategy anymore. And so it's really reevaluating what our goals are at different decades in life and treating accordingly. So for me, it's a fairly long duration for a lot of women, on the order of decades. If for most women, that still makes sense. But then it's that same reevaluation.
Those first 10 years after menopause. Then after that, it's on a yearly basis where I reevaluate, check and make sure nothing has changed in their medical history. And 9 out of 10 times, they don't want to come off of it, unless there's an indication for it. And so most women are happy, they're feeling well, and they want to continue feeling that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also want to pick your brain a little bit on where you think the future, like predictions you have in women's health. With all your experience in being in this area, I'm sure you have some thoughts about where we're headed and what you hope to see.
I'm hopeful that the conversations are becoming more widespread. There is going to be more access for women everywhere to have this kind of conversation with their doctors and with their healthcare providers. I'm very optimistic in regards to the telehealth companies coming on board and really providing services to women who otherwise wouldn't have that access, and making it more financially approachable versus, you know, you need to take out a loan in order to be able to get your treatment options. And I think the next exciting part of this is really the sexual health component, understanding it's not just sexual health and it's actually women's health in general and well-being. It's a component of it. And us talking about it more and really making it, you know, sexual health is now vital health. It's part of everything else, not an entity out there by itself. And women are becoming more informed. They're not going to stay quiet, like I said. And they are navigating these shifts more swiftly. They're going in with their symptom trackers and asking the provider, hey, this is what's happening. I think I'm in perimenopause. Can you help me? And having that ownership where if the doctor says, look, this isn't part of my wheelhouse and I'm not giving you hormones, saying thank you so much for your time and walking out and finding somebody else who will help them. So these are things that I see that are coming up. I already see it trickling and I'm hoping it's going to be more forceful in the future. And I think the last thing I'm really excited about is the fact that the next generations are just going to walk through this. They're not going to have these roadblocks that we've all had to kind of overcome to get to where we stand today.
Absolutely. Gila, thank you so much. For people who want to learn more about menopause, perimenopause, women's health, and about you and connect with you, where can they find you? And I know you're doing a lot of great events. So where can they find information about these events?
I'm mainly on social media on Instagram at Dr. Gila Senamar, and my website is Gila MD. And a lot of the upcoming events that I host here in Miami are all listed on my website, as well as all the prior speaking engagements and upcoming ones that are happening in this year. And I have a podcast as well, so Her Time, Her Health, on Apple, Spotify, and on Pinnacle. And I'm kind of all over the place, but I do respond to everything on my Instagram myself. So if anybody needs to reach out to me, that's how they can get me.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and share it with a friend. Until next time, do something to help improve your whole health naturally.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.